Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Marty Smith America podcast. This is volume 97, the Nick Bosa episode. He has been dominant since he got to the NFL, so we are dedicating this one to Travis's former Buckeye.
Can I call it just the Bosa edition? And can we throw Joey into it also?
He was 97 in Columbus, but he is 99 in the league, I think.
Well, I'm a Buckeye, so I don't care about the NFL number.
I can understand why you feel that way, man. You have your allegiances, and if I've ever met anyone who is utterly over the top about their respective college football team, his name is Travis Rockhold. Look, guys, it's a very unique time in our history. It's an uncertain time. It's a very concerning time. A lot of people are struggling right now, but right now we cannot be overwhelmed. We have to work. We have to keep our loved ones safe and protect our communities. We have to work to stay strong, to stay connected, to stay focused. We have to work to inspire, to innovate, to build new solutions. But for all of this to work, we have to work together. At ZipRecruiter, we connect employers and people every day, but today is different. We're partnering with first responders, government officials, the medical community, the innovators, and the manufacturing, transportation, and food distribution industries to make sure we're finding the right people for the right jobs right now. Let's work together. ZipRecruiter.com/work together. That's ZipRecruiter.com/work together. My favorite athlete as a child, as a young man, as an adolescent, and even still as an adult is Michael Jordan. No one ever inspired me to dream the way that Michael inspired me to dream. And that's why I cannot wait to see The Last Dance, the 10-part documentary series about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. It's a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. And that series begins on Sunday night, April 19th at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. You can listen to a wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast that's presented by State Farm and AT&T. That's available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. I will tell you that as a young man, my mom, for whatever reason, decided to give me wallpaper that had 10-speed bikes on it. Little 10-speed bikes, hundreds of these 10-speed bikes. They were orange. I don't know why. But that was the wallpaper that Mama chose for my room. I very quickly, from about 7th grade on, began to cover that wallpaper with Michael Jordan posters. I had posters of Michael palming the moon. I had Michael taking flight from the free throw line during the 1988 slam dunk contest. I had a 6-foot tall poster of Michael. I had a 6-foot wide poster of Michael palming the basketball. I had basically every poster that you could have. No one ever captivated me more. And as we got into discussing this on Marty and McGee, I was reminded of a couple of really funny stories about Michael Jordan. And even still, people ask me all the time what individuals I'm still chasing that I desperately want to interview. At the absolute apex tip of the spear of that list sits Michael Jordan. I've never had the opportunity to sit across from him. It is the rarest of luxuries. And as Ryan McGee and I started to discuss this on the Marty and McGee radio program, we were reminded of some funny stories, and I wanted to play that part of Marty and McGee for you guys before we get to this week's guest. And it will be very relatable to you about what it's like when someone that you consider to be a hero, someone that has captivated and inspired you, actually shows up directly in front of you.
I've told you this story before, but this is a funny story about Michael. So 2013 NBA season. ESPN was in the process of trying to secure the current package that we have to broadcast the NBA. And so our bosses sent out a group of reporting teams to every single game on opening night. And they sent Andrea Pelkey, our great friend, and who just had a birthday. Happy birthday, Andrea. And me, to the Hornets-Bucks game in Charlotte. It was the first game back as the Hornets. The Hive is back, and it's a big deal, right? City's hype. We're the Hornets again. No more Bobcats. And so they're playing the Bucks. It was Jabari Parker's first game in the NBA. He's been this big star at Duke. He never lost a game in high school, all that stuff, right? So he comes in, and the game is crazy. Kemba Walker hits like a 50-footer to win the game at the buzzer, and the Hive is crazy. And we go in the Bucks locker room, and we interview Jabari Parker. It's like his dog died. Like, hey, bud, there's 82 of these, man. Get your chin up. You're okay.
Yeah, don't. So then you're going to lose a few more.
You're going to lose a couple games, Jabari. So, and this was, of course, pre-Giannis Bucks. So they weren't the most dominant team in the league.
Right.
So after we get done with interviewing Jabari, we go out in the hallway and we're waiting on the Hornets locker room to open. And it's all these reporters everywhere, man. It's probably 30 different reporting teams, man. It's a big deal. The Hornets are back. So I'm in my phone texting Lainey about what she wants me to bring home for dinner. And I'm like, babe, I'll be leaving the arena here in 15, 20 minutes. Just waiting to interview the Hornets and then I'm out of here. And all of the sudden, the air changes in the tunnel. And I look up and to my left just a little bit, and there is a hand coming at me. And I follow that hand all the way up its arm to the face, and it is Michael Jordan. And Michael Jordan says, Marty, man, thanks so much for being here tonight. We appreciate you covering the team. It's really awesome that you came out. And I was so starstruck, I could not speak. And I just went, oh, thanks, MJ. To this day, it was a total that. Thanks, MJ. To this day, every time I see one of those reporters who was standing in that hallway, they go, thanks, MJ. Starstruck, bro. I was like that serious dog star on that hood. I just started glowing. Like the
Thanks, MJ.
Thanks, MJ. What a clown.
So I got Michael's autograph.
How embarrassing.
At the Duke Children's Classic Golf Tournament. This would have been right after he was done at the University of North Carolina. And this is this is on a golf course at Duke University, 8 miles from the campus that Michael Jordan had just played for 3 years. And I got his autograph in this little red leather bound autograph book. But I was flipping, it's actually in my office. This would have been like 1985 or 6, and I'm flipping through it. And the autographs that are in here are Michael Jordan, but then I also have like, Arnold Palmer and Chet Atkins.
What?
And Perry Como.
In the same book?
In the same book. Gerald Ford, Ron Jaworski's in here.
You gotta be kidding me, man.
Norm Van Brocklin, Buddy Hackett, Roger Staubach, Neil Armstrong.
How did you meet all these people?
We just went to the golf tournament. It was a charity. This was kind of before everybody in the world has a charity golf tournament now. I'm surprised you and I don't have a Marty McGee charity golf tournament. But back then, in the early mid 80s, that was kind of a new thing. And so it was a fundraiser for Duke Children's Classic. I mean, I got Hank Aaron's autograph, one of those things. They did it for several years in the 80s. But yeah, so Michael Jordan signed the autograph book with Gerald Ford and Sonny Schroyer, who played Enos on Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, he's Enos straight, son.
But President Ford, the one I didn't get was Bob Hope. When Bob Hope was there, it was complete and total chaos. But I got Michael, and Michael signed way back in the back of the book, like 100 pages away from everyone else. But the one person who signed on the page right across from him, the Hamburglar. I'm going to tweet out a picture. I'm going to do a collage of some of these. Jimmy Dean is in here.
No way. Did he draw a biscuit?
Yeah. Jamie Farr from MASH. Ahmad Rashad. It's ridiculous. When you're a kid, you get the Sam Snead. When you're a kid, you get those autographs, and you should, because we weren't selling those on eBay, but yeah. Michael Jordan.
That
and the
is
Hamburglar.
Amazing that you have that, man.
Yeah, and then Michael Jordan and the Hamburglar ended up going into business together right after that, because Michael Jordan was, you know, McDonald's guy forever.
Mr. McDonald's. We back to like my infatuation with Michael. When I was in seventh grade or so, my parents We always opened our Christmas presents from the family on Christmas Eve. And
we
so
still
on
do that.
Christmas, we do too in a lot of cases. So, we got done with opening our presents and we were in the other room and my daddy goes, boy, hey, I don't think my dad knew my name. I think he named me and forgot my name.
Just, boy, you're just boy.
Go in there to the tree. You forgot a gift. So I go, I'm like, awesome. So I go back in there. I'm looking under everywhere. I'm like, daddy, I don't see it. He said, look on the tree. So I look on the tree and they have taken fishing line and connected two tickets for Bulls Hornets at the original hive.
What?
And I pull that off the tree and I can't believe what I'm looking at. Like, I'm actually going to go get to see Michael Jordan play.
What?
So me and daddy jumped in a truck and drove to Charlotte and to see Michael. We were in the highest reaches of the arena, but it did. I mean, Michael was a teeny little figure running around, but I got to see Michael Jordan play as a little boy, and I'll never forget, we left at the crack of dawn for a 7 p.m. game because daddy was hell-bent determined that I was going to get Michael Jordan's autograph. We get down to the hive. He's driving around these metal partition gates. He don't care. He's off-roading the pickup truck. And we get back there somewhere near the player lot. I don't know how, but we did. Dad probably paid off the guards. I don't know. But anyway, I'm sitting there, and it's pouring rain. And like, we're looking as hard as we can to see if Michael comes. Is that Michael? And I wound up getting J.R. Reed's autograph. Another great North Carolina
player. Yeah.
Title. Yep. I still have it. I still got J.R.'s autograph.
I meant what I said there. It was hilarious to, it's a hilarious story now to share that moment where Michael said hello to me. And I've had a couple of other moments where I had the opportunity to kind of be in his presence and be around him. And that's a direct result of my relationship with 7-time NASCAR champion Jimmy Johnson, who knows Michael and has spent some time with Michael. And just there's an aura, man. I mean, I'm not kidding you. You feel the energy around that man. And I am not at all afraid or scared or embarrassed to be a fanboy. I am 100%. A Michael Jordan fanboy, and I'm okay with that. I will always be okay with that, and I do hope that someday I get the opportunity just to sit across from him and ask a few questions. It's funny, Fred Whitfield is the president of the Charlotte Hornets and has been one of Michael's closest advisors, best friends since Michael came in long ago. Fred ran the Jordan brand forever, and all you guys know about me and the Jordan brand. I have more pairs of Air Jordans than I can count, most of them still on ice in boxes in my closet. I love the Jordan brand. And when I met Fred, he and I went to lunch together, and I wore him out. I wore him completely out with questions about this design or that design. What inspired this shoe? How did that shoe come to be? This little accent, that little detail. I'm that guy, and I love it. I mean, I am a shoe guy. I am a sneaker head, and I'm fortunately and unfortunately, I have by osmosis passed that down to my son, Cameron. He has become a sneaker head, too, and it's heavy on my wallet. That's a whole other story. Let's get to this week's guest. Extremely insightful interview with someone who is one of the most successful business people on earth. Tillman Fertitta is the owner of the Houston Rockets. He is a restaurant mogul. He is a hotel and gaming mogul. He owns the Golden Nugget casino chain. He is the owner of several uber high-end steakhouse chains, including Morton's, including Del Frisco's, and the like. He is an extremely captivating person, and it's been a unique time for all of us, as I stated off the top of the show, because of what coronavirus has meant for business owners like Mr. Fertitta. It is a whole other level when you're talking about tens of thousands of employees that are under your stead who are affected by this and how you approach that and what it's like to be one of 30 owners in the National Basketball Association in this moment where your season has been interrupted and the great hope that maybe, maybe somehow it could be restarted. I talked to Tillman about his path, about how he became this unbelievable business person and what it's like to manage all of these people in this moment and the criticisms that come with the decisions you make. I said to him during the interview, and I've said to people subsequently, it's really sweet to be the tip of the spear when things are good. It's a whole other story to be the tip of the spear in a crisis moment. And I think that you will be enlightened by this interview. I think you'll learn a lot. I most certainly did. So without further ado, here is Marty Smith's America episode, Nick Bosa, episode Bosa for Travis, with Houston Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta.
Sir, thank you so much for your time. We greatly appreciate it. And as I studied your amazing business asset portfolio, it's just hard to wrap my hands around how diverse it is. Everything from higher-end restaurant brands, the Golden Nugget Casino chains, hotels, and, oh yeah, an NBA franchise. How do you possibly get started with that type of business portfolio? What was the first big purchase?
You know, believe it or not, and Marty, you know, just like you're an icon in your business, we're all blessed with different talents, and God gave me an entrepreneur brain, and always it was to make money. But really, my first business was the video game business when I hit it with Pac-Man and Asteroids right at the right time. And believe it or not, I don't know if you remember Shaklee Vitamins. I did that for a couple of years and then started, you know, building and started building homes and little shopping centers, and then built my first hotel when I was 26. And then in 87, 88, when the crisis then, which was a huge banking and real estate crisis back in 1987, 88, I bought some partners out of a restaurant that I was involved in and said, you know what, I'll just go build restaurants for a while. And so that's the rest of the story. And, you know, restaurants led to hotels, more hotels and casinos and everything else today.
What role did Pac-Man play? Explain that.
It was a cash business, and I hit it at the right time. And it gave, you know, everything is cash flow and liquidity, which I don't have any right now. but back in 87, 88, it gave me the ability to get into other businesses.
Which business requires the most care?
You know, they all do. The casino business, you got to take care of those customers because it's so competitive. And I have the five golden nuggets, you know, from Vegas to Atlantic City, to, you know, right outside of Houston, Lake Charles to Biloxi. But then restaurants you got to take care of. And, you know, right now I have restaurants, you know, I'm kind of different because I have all the high-end steakhouses like Mastro's, Martin's, Del Frisco's. But then, you know, I have the Bubba Gump's and the Rainforest. And so I'm kind of all over the map in the restaurant industry with 600 restaurants, which makes it a little more difficult. And, of course, in the hotel business, it's the hospitality business. But nothing needs more TLC than the Houston Rockets.
I believe you. Why?
It's I'm being a little facetious, but there's no love. And, you know, like people, you know, ask you, why do you not do this or why don't you do that? And believe me, to win a championship would be the greatest thrill in the world, more than opening up any casino or building any building or opening any restaurant. And that's what people don't understand, that you own a basketball team not to make money. You own a basketball team because you have those competitive juices and you want to win that championship for your fans. There's nothing in my lifetime with all my accomplishments of, you know, being on the Forbes list or opening this or doing this or being in a business hall of fame of bringing a championship to your hometown that you grew up in and the team that you were a fan of, even when they were in San Diego in the 70s. So that would be my greatest excitement.
Let's discuss that a bit further. The impact of sports in Houston, that city has been through everything. Hurricanes, floods. And sports is always this community gathering place where everyone can find not only a distraction, but find hope. How do you define what sports means to your hometown?
Well, I mean, as in all hometowns, and, you know, you realize this, you never really paid as big a fan as I've always been. And I was even a limited partner in the Texans a few years ago, and I was a limited partner in the Rockets for years before I bought the team. But what you really learn when you own this team in your hometown, sports is religion, okay? And you say you want to talk about politics at the dinner table, you want to talk about religion at the dinner table. To your fan base out there, it is religion. And realizing that we're doing this for the fans, and that's what it's all about. And the one thing I want to do is bring a championship to these fans, because there is nothing like the gathering place. All of us would be dealing with this great tragedy a lot better if we could go home and just watch sports at night, and it would change our lives. And I think so much of the mental health that's going to come out of this, which is horrible, if we would have had our sports, we would have done a lot better.
I want to get into all that in just a minute, too. But you noted there that you used to be part owner of the Texans. You were an early investor with Mr. McNair. And I know that you had to kind of step away because of your investment in the gaming business in casinos. Now that sports gambling isn't nearly as taboo and, in fact, is embraced, what interest might you have in possibly owning an NFL franchise someday?
I love sports, and sure, it would be an unbelievable dream to own an NFL team, and if I was ever fortunate enough to own one in any city, all I can tell the fans of that city is I'll do whatever it takes to make it exciting and to win a championship for their city. Like I said, I'm in the hospitality business. It's all, and it goes back, and I'm sure you've read that you if somebody wants scrambled eggs at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, you give them scrambled eggs. And I'm in the service business, and I haven't changed today. If I'm walking through one of my properties and I see trash on the floor, I pick it up. I'm in the hospitality business. If I own a team for you, my goal is to bring you a championship, whether it's an NFL, NHL, NBA, MLB, MLS. I want to win. That's the competitiveness.
As someone whose entire business portfolio is predicated on people gathering together, how do you even begin to define what this pandemic has meant for your businesses and the way that you operate on a day-to-day basis?
It's so hard because of the tragedy of having to furlough, you know, 40-something thousand people. And, you know, I was one of the first ones to do it. And as you see, I've been around longer as the boss, I think. I'm kind of telling you how old I am. But a lot of CEOs, it took them, is it really going to be this bad? And you knew it was going to be bad. We only had a few thousand cases. And they talk about peaking and so many people dying that I knew that we weren't going to be shut down at our casinos for 2 weeks or our restaurants for 2 weeks. And so I did try to get ahead of it, because the whole goal is to survive this and be able to bring all your employees back. It's sad. It's tragic what we're all going through. Everybody's feeling pain. And, you know, I don't like when some people say, well, pay me. I don't want to feel the pain. Everybody needs to feel pain in a tragedy like this.
What would you say to anybody who questioned your approach, that you did feel like you had that foresight to furlough those people rather than outright lay them off?
I was told, Tillman, if you're the first one out there, you're going to catch the bad press. And, you know, your parent yesterday furloughed 40-something thousand people. I read today where a bunch of the ESPN people were being furloughed. And it's not news anymore. But what people don't understand is that we do all know this. And if you bring it back to where people live every day, we pay yesterday's bills with today's dollars. Mm-hmm. And they shut down the country, you know, in a matter of like 72 hours. And all of a sudden you have a payroll of $1.5 billion a year. You have almost 60,000 employees. And then all of a sudden you don't have any money coming in. And even my tail, which was the payrolls I still had coming, plus the severance I paid from the day that I closed, was still $100 million. And any business can only last so long. And that's why I've borrowed other money to make sure that I have an insurance policy that if nothing opens till the end of the year, this company succeeds so I can bring back all my employees. And you just, I've been through a lot of crises, and this is when, you know, the name of the game is save the company and bring your employees back. And we all have to feel some pain in between, but my goal is for us all to be here standing in the end.
I'm sure that when times are good, being the tip of the spear is a wonderful thing and affords you so much looking down from atop the mountain. But in a very difficult moment, I imagine being the tip of the spear and thereby the chief decision maker must in some ways be hellish. What comes with that, that I'm not the tip of the spear, so I don't live that life. What comes with that that folks like me can't see?
In the good times, it's all good. And in the bad times, when, you know, what people don't understand is, well, you're a billionaire. You know, why aren't you paying all your employees? On and on and on. You're a billionaire on paper. You have a couple of billion in equity in the Rockets, and you have a couple of billion in equity in your business, and you have other assets. But today, nothing's producing any money. You know, most billionaires don't have a billion in cash. It's equity in their businesses. No different than somebody telling you they're a millionaire because they have equity in their house and their car and a little investment, but they can't write you out a check for $10,000. Businesses operate the same way. And I have enough liquidity to make this company survive by making tough decisions. And I just want to bring everybody back, and it's going to be a tough rebuilding, and we move on. But you catch a lot. Nobody likes billionaires right now, especially billionaire sports owners. And that's just the way it is. And I understand, but I have a lot of, I get a lot of, you know, great times when things aren't good, but my days are more difficult than ever because I just want to bring everybody back.
Specifically as an NBA franchise owner, how do you describe what this pandemic has done in stopping the league?
I mean, it's horrible. I mean, you know, it's horrible for all of us. I mean, it's horrible for the players. We haven't had any staff reductions at the Houston Rockets. We haven't asked anybody to take any pay cuts at the Houston Rockets, because all my businesses operate in a silo, and that's a very well-financed and very successful business. And it's still not good for anybody. I mean, you know, players aren't happy not being able to play basketball. James Harden loves basketball. He plays basketball 12 months out of the year. I can promise you he's not happy right now. Russell Westbrook isn't happy. Eric Gordon's not happy. PJ Tucker's not happy. Everybody just wants to play, but yet it doesn't work. And I understand, because this is a horrible crisis, this coronavirus. And we're always said, gosh, when we come back, I want to play in front of the fans. I don't think we're going to be able to play in front of the fans, because it's not going to be the right thing to do. And so if we can test the players and we make sure that, you know, everybody's healthy and nobody has another issue of an asthma issue or something, what could cause them a problem, I think it would be great for us to start playing basketball whenever the doctors and the NBA tell us it's all right. You know, it would be a shame not to play basketball and finish this year.
When and how, in your best case scenario, could that happen?
I think the best case scenario is that when we can, we realize it's not a health issue, because remember, what people don't understand is it's not just the 12 players. You know, a traveling team is 50 to 60 people with coaches and managers and digital people. And it takes a lot to move a basketball team. And we just got to make sure we keep everybody healthy. But gosh darn, right now, if we could just watch it on TV with all those seats blacked out, it would be a lot of fun to watch a basketball game right now.
It sure would. And your guys were starting to play so well when the season was so abruptly halted. What do you think their ceiling was this year?
We do everything we can do to win a championship. And you know, right now, when you have stars like James and Russell and a great coach like Mike D'Antoni, this is the window, and nobody keeps a continual window, you know, in sports. Windows come and go. And even though, you know, I think this year we'll have, you know, the longest streak in the NBA of San Antonio and Golden State don't make the playoffs of getting in the playoffs. They're like seven straight years. And we want to be in the playoffs every year. It's not in my DNA to rebuild. But at the same time, even when you're not rebuilding, there's only so many years that if you're a realist that you can really win a championship. And I have Russell and James the next 3 years. And, you know, we're going to do whatever we can do to be one of those top four or five teams. I mean, let's be honest. It takes some luck to win a championship, but all you can do is set yourself up to be one of the better teams. The great Golden State only won 3 out of 5, as great as they were, because you still have to have a little luck to win a championship. So our goal is for the next few years to set ourselves up to be one of those top four or five teams that have the ability to win it all. And that's all we can do.
In today's NBA, it seems like there's super team and super team and super team. And you managed to put together a couple of guys who are two of the most dynamic players in the league for certain, in Harden and Westbrook. What was your thought process of pairing them together? And what consideration did you give that it was actually possible?
You know, number one, I mean, we were really special the last 2 years with Chris Paul and James Harden.
Yeah.
And, you know, listen to my basketball people, and you know, it's nice to be able to be the guy that signs off on it at the end, but thank God I don't have to make the decision or bring the recommendation, and we'll always be a really good basketball team. But you know, I understood. I've always been amazed at Russell Westbrook and that he was going to make us play faster. And we thought under Mike Stahl and that what was best for us. You know, what Chris Paul has done for Oklahoma this year is unbelievable. And, you know, they've got a 40-24 record, the same as us. So, you know, I think it was just one of those things that it might have made us, our people felt like a tad better. But at the same time, Chris is doing great, but Russell's been great for us, and we're happy to have him.
From my perspective and not really being immersed in the NBA as much as maybe some other sports that I cover a bit more often, I'm so impressed with Adam Silver and kind of his foresight and the way that he operates as a leader. How would you describe what he does as the commissioner of the NBA?
Well, I think Adam does an unbelievable job, and it's been great getting to know Adam. And Adam is a commissioner for all the owners and all the players, and he's going to always do what's in our best interest. But what I like as an entrepreneur is that Adam is always looking out and how do I make the NBA so much better 5 years from now and 10 years from now. And the team that he's put together up there with Rick and Mark and everybody up there, it's we want to be the leader. We want to be the best. And let's not sit on our hands and not do something that always makes the NBA special.
How often do you talk to the other owners, and which one impresses you the most?
Every one of them impresses me, if you want to know the truth, because they found the way to be one of 30 owners in the NBA. So I'm quite impressed with all of them. But, you know certain ones better than others. You know, I talked to Joe in Golden State. I talked to Mark in Milwaukee, and I talk to a lot of different owners, and they're all great guys. I like Steve, of course, and the Clippers, and everybody. I mean, I could really go down everyone individually and say something nice about every single one of the owners that we have in the NBA.
The foundation of your entire empire, it seems, is watching your dad work in a restaurant that he had when you were a kid. What did you learn watching your dad work?
My family is a family of, and I'm going back generations of entrepreneurs. My dad's dad was an entrepreneur. My mother's dad was an entrepreneur, and it's definitely in your genes, in your DNA. And I thank God I maybe got it a little better than everybody else, but it's definitely a God-given talent. I mean, I've never been the smartest guy in the room. I've never been that smart guy, but I always just was given the gift to understand business. And if you take that entrepreneurial brain with the wanting to win, no matter what business you're in, the gaming business, restaurant business, hotel business, or the basketball business, the sports business, the two go really well together. And I get to be an entrepreneur, you know, helping and signing off on players for the Houston Rockets. And you know, more than anything, I think, why have I been successful? I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. And I know what I know to make the Houston Rockets successful, and I know what I don't know, and that is evaluating talent.
I read where one of your jobs when you were younger was peeling shrimp at the old man's restaurant. What do you remember about doing that?
Well, I mean, I just remember, you know, learning all the positions and saying, gosh, I want to know how to run the front of the house. I want to know how to cook. I want to know, you know, how to peel shrimp, how to buy seafood. And I remember when I was 12 years old, I told my dad, listen, you need to go home and let me run this thing because I got some really good ideas. And, you know, I can remember when I had 5 restaurants, and I still think that you watch your dad and you watch how hard they work. But I can remember when I was really successful, you know, in the early 90s or late 80s, and I had 5 restaurants, you know, and I was making, gosh, $2 million a year. And you go back to the 80s, that's a bunch of money.
Heck yeah, it's a lot of money now.
My dad saying to me, why don't you slow down? Why? What is wrong? You are making so much money. Why do you want anything else in life? And, you know, and at times I thought, that isn't for me. I just want to keep on going. And thank God I didn't. So I get to own the Houston Rockets, which is the greatest joy in the world.
What is the most important leadership trait for someone in a position like yours?
It's nice to be important. It's more important to be nice. It's people knowing that you're the best leader they can work for. I have probably 30 people that are my top executives that have been with me over 25 years. I have 2 assistants sitting right outside my door that have been with me 28 and 26 years. Now, they could have filled a bathtub full of tears that I put them in. But everybody likes a strong leader, and knowing that, are they going to help me get to the promised land? And when this whole thing happened, even though all my people see that, you know, how tough it is, and they have faith in their leader. I mean, we're all making 50% of what we used to make right now because the company's so big, we're all doing whatever it takes to make sure it's going to come back and be successful. And, you know, this one division of Tillman Fertitta Companies, but it's the hospitality business and the gaming business, which is our $4 billion revenue business that does $700 million in EBITDA, that gave me the opportunity to own the Rockets and gave me the opportunity to own 5-star hotels. And, you know, it's the engine, and everybody wants to see it back and whole, and we'll be back. If America comes back, I can promise you Landry's will be back 100%. We're just fighting it hard right now.
Couple more and I'll let you run. I've kept you too long already.
No, absolutely. This is fun. They're great questions, and you're an icon in your business.
Well, thank you, sir. It's very kind. What would you say is the most difficult decision you've had to make as that leader of your businesses?
You don't like upsetting people's life. And the greatest joy that I've had in life, and I probably take the most pride in, is that I've made so many hundreds of people's lives better than they ever thought they were going to have, because they've grown with me from the beginning in this business, and I've watched people have great lifestyles. But then the sadness is that when something like this happens, we were having our best year ever at Landry's, just our growth, and we had just bought the Palm chain the previous week, and then by Monday they were all shut down.
Wow.
But the sadness is having to furlough all these people where you could only pay so much severance and it changing their lives. I mean, I just want this over and to get all these people back to work and all of us feel, especially them, as little pain as possible.
You last fall released Shut Up and Listen, a New York Times bestseller. Congratulations on that as well. What is the value of listening?
You know, I've always listened, and I tell people every day is a listening day, and you'll learn something. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I've had to go back and live my book the last 30 days. And a lot
in
of the
ways?
Advice I've given, I'm having to listen to right now. And you know, a lot of the little teachings that I did in my show, Billion Dollar Buyer, I'm having to live myself right now. But I've always believed that listen, and you'll always learn a lot. And I've learned a lot every single day that we've been in this crisis.
What are some of those lessons that you wrote about that you're currently living?
Well, you borrow money when you don't need it, number one. And there's a paddle for everybody's ass, so always set yourself up to be successful. It's knowing your numbers. That as big as my company is, it within 3 days, I had a daily cash burn sheet of what we're spending and what's coming in because it was so absolutely tough to be able to get your arms around that one day you're doing $12-13 million in business and the next day you're not doing any. And so you're living whatever you want to see.
Absolutely remarkable career, absolutely remarkable business portfolio and the people that you've built up. And I just, I wish you well through this. I don't admire what you're having to manage right now, but, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time and sharing your insight with me.
I appreciate it. And as rough as it's been, you know, I thank the good Lord that you know, what so many of these families have had to go through where they've walked their loved ones into the hospital and never gotten to see them again is an unbearable experience. And it kind of makes everything else we're doing just not quite as important because health and happiness is everything and money and sports just isn't quite as important.
I appreciate it, sir. Thank you so much. Have an amazing day, an amazing week, and keep fighting. That's all
Thank
we can
you,
do
sir.
Right now.
We will keep fighting. I promise you that.
There's a whole lot that comes with being that successful. And I think one of the things that comes with being that successful is the dogged determination to stay that successful. I have asked many a leader, the greatest threat to excellence, and the answer is simply complacency. And as you could hear there, Tillman in no way, shape, or form is letting himself become complacent. And
I loved what he said about, you know, he's not someone that was going to rebuild. That's just not in his DNA. We see a lot of times in sports, you know, you know, tank for two or, you know, tank for Trevor, you know, basketball teams trying to get that number one pick. This dude is just going to keep going for it. And like he's, you know, that's just not how he operates.
Yeah, I mean, him continuing to shuffle the roster and try to accrue the best talent in Houston, because I loved what he said. The dream is to bring a championship to his hometown. And I wanted to know what sports means to his hometown when they have managed so much from flooding to hurricanes, all of these moments of tragedy and all of these obstacles. What is sports in that town? And I know that it is an emotional vehicle for the folks in Houston and certainly for Tillman himself. So thank you so much to him for his time. He's a very busy man with a lot on his plate right now, and I'm so grateful that he took the time to chat with us on Marty Smith's America. Before we get out of here, I want to remind you guys one more time, 9 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Sunday, April 19th. Make sure to watch The Last Dance, this unbelievable. This is the first part of a 10-installment documentary series that takes a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. I watched the 5-minute trailer that ESPN put out on social media this week, and I can't wait. I just can't wait to see it. All the amazing personalities on those teams, from certainly Michael to Scottie Pippen to Horace Grant, Bill Cartwright, John Paxson, B.J. Armstrong, Ron Harper, Dennis Rodman, on and on and on. I mean, there were just unbelievable collection of personalities. Luke Longley.
Hey, Marty, does Lainey know that she's losing her husband for like 2 hours every Sunday for the next like however weeks, how many weeks this is going? Does she just know that you're not going to be like present?
I do believe this is something she'll watch with me, because the 30 for 30s are so well done. They are so well done. And they're human stories. They are not just sports stories. Sports is the platform for the broader scope. And I just think that's awesome. I can't wait to watch them. And you know, you have Jerry Reinsdorf as the owner. You have Jerry Krause as the uber-polarizing general manager. You have Phil Jackson, this unbelievable figure, as the head coach, this master psychologist. It's just, I can't wait. What a captivating collection of individuals. And that is brought to you by State Farm. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. So y'all check out The Last Dance. I know that Lainey and I will be. I'm going to drag my kids in there to watch it too. Thank you guys so much for listening. Travis, great job every single week getting us these great guests. I'm so grateful to Patrick Abrahams. I want to say that too. He has a tremendous relationship with Mr. Fertitta, and that is how we got him on Marty Smith's America. Patrick is my field producer. One of my field producers for SportsCenter and everything that I do on the television side, and he is such a wonderful soul. What he is doing right now in the communities in Florida with Tomorrow's Team, it is a charity that was founded by Patrick and his brothers, and every single day they are going out in the greater Orlando community, and they are delivering food to folks who don't have it. They have very recently gone, they have called farms who have all of these perishable items, whether it's squash or cucumbers or berries, tons and tons of produce. It's going to go bad. So Patrick and his brothers and Rob Parker, another great friend to me, are going and picking up in these trucks all of this produce, and they are delivering this fresh produce to these neighborhoods that need the food and the nutrients that it provides. They're doing beautiful work in the community, admirable work, and it was Patrick that secured Tillman for us for the Marty Smith America podcast. So thank you to Patrick, and I want to say thank you to all of the doctors and nurses, first responders right now, law enforcement officials, firemen, our military, who are all working so hard right now to keep our community safe and well. I can't wait for you guys to see the pieces that I'm working on right now. I am working on multiple feature pieces at the same time that highlight some of the individuals who are working for us on the front lines. And I can't wait for you guys to see those. I have actually, no lie, been in tears myself while going through the production process of interviewing these people and putting the pieces together. So what they are doing is heroic, admirable, and appreciated. Have a great week, guys. That's Marty Smith's America, Volume 97, the Bosa edition. Stay home. Stay healthy. We are going to be together again. Be well.